What's up, everybody? Welcome to the last episode for the TCP for 2023. Haven't really put it together, just been having fun making episodes, but I've been at this a little over a year. It just gets more and more fun talking to all the different authors and experts, from thrillers to true crime to movie directors. It's been a lot more satisfying than I actually ever thought it would. So we are going to continue full throttle into 2024, and I already have a list of guests lined up to get us rolling. So I will be gone for the rest of December, but I will be back probably mid-January of 2024, and we will kick right back off where we left off. On the writing front, over 30,000 words into my first shot at a sci-fi novel. No title, of course, because those things are the worst to come up with. The only thing worse than a title is a blurb. And I know I've said this before, but I'll probably won't get to figuring out what the title is until I write the end at the first part of the manuscript. So don't hold your breath on that one. And it's still coming together, even though I'm 30,000 in. So I don't have a whole lot to say about it, but when we come back in January, I will have a little more to tell you. For now, the best I can get, best I can give you is picture 48 Hours, the Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte movie, not the the homicide docuseries on A&E. Take 48 Hours, put it in space. And as I say that, I wonder if that's not too old of a movie reference. Then that's also not my problem. So if you're not into 80s movies, strongly suggest you go back to Amazon and rent 48 Hours, because it still holds up. Trust me, it will be, compared to the comedies you see today, that one would be a breath of fresh air. So if you haven't seen it, go back and see it. It still holds up. And when we come back in January, I'll hopefully have 30 more thousand words done, and I'll have a lot more to tell you. But for now, tie two, I've got next round of edits done. Shelley has returned those to me, working out some plot kinks. You know, you get that emails like, yes, I really like this. I really like this. And then she's like, what are you doing with this? And so I'm working on the question, what are you doing with this right now? And I'm stumped. So I got some stuff to fix, but by the time we get back, that will be fixed and it will be well on its way. And Jeff Hayes will have a pretty cool cover for us to look at, and more to share then. So let's get to tonight. Tonight, A.M. Adair, author of the L. Anderson series, is back with me to talk about a new game. Miss Adair is a retired chief warrant officer from the United States Navy with over 21 years in the intelligence community, specializing in counterintelligence and human intelligence. She's been to numerous countries all around the world, to include multiple tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. Her experiences have been unique and provided her imagination with a wealth of material to draw from to give her stories life. A lifelong fan of the thriller genre, she's an associate member of the International Thriller Writers. Her debut novel, Shadow Game, the first in the L. Anderson series, came out in October 2019. She turned that into a graphic novel, which I own, and it's so much fun. I really want to do that with Shattered Circle at some point. Book two, Deeper Shadow, came out in November 2020. Shadow War followed that, and a new game came out just this past October. In a new game, a killer is on the loose with nothing to lose. An assassin is taking out cartel members, which I find grossly entertaining. Each crime scene leaves more. You're supposed to be quiet until I'm done with this part. Okay. But each crime scene, more questions than answers. No one in law enforcement or intel has any leads except for Navy SEAL turned CIA operative Julian Saunders. He knows they're hunting for a ghost, someone the U.S. government has declared dead. Joined by an elite covert operations team, Julian heads to New Orleans, of all places, searching for the only person capable of taking cartel heads on, L. Anderson. As the body count rises and the brutality of the kills becomes more intense, he questions whether the woman they knew still exists, or if by pursuing her, they're signing their own death warrants. Just finished that book a couple days ago, and Alma, thank you for coming back to talk about it.
Of course. Because like, it was so hard not to say anything like during that whole thing. You know, I apologize. You know, but the laughter finally kind of took over. But you have so much going on. This is so cool, man. Congratulations.
It's been fun. You know, I just kicked off this little podcast thing after doing a couple of guest spots with various podcasts. And I come home one day and I'm like, Erica, I'm going to start a podcast. She's like, what? Cool. I'm like, yeah, cool. And then I got to figure out how to do it. But I mean, it's you joined me like early on when I'm not even sure what the audio sounds like. It's just, we get to just get on, compare notes, talk about our books. It gets really creative after a while talking to people, and you're just like, you see how everybody does it differently. It's just a blast.
Oh yeah.
As far as
I love being here. So thank you for having me again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, when we talk about Elle, you know, she's got a team in the first three books, and they're off on missions. They're fighting a good fight. What goes on at the end of book three, sets us up for when you say a new game, you're not wrong. I mean, this one was, the action is always tight, and it's got a dark tinge to it, even though we're talking about a heroic team, but you went gritty on this one.
Yeah, I might have heard that a time or two, and I know this is probably going to surprise you, and I'm saying that with a little bit of sarcasm, and anybody who's read me, but you know, I have a bit of a dark side, and you know, with that, one of the fun things that you know, write thrillers, and especially when you get into the action, is you can really indulge that darker side. For a lot of us, you know, especially anybody who's you know done time in uniform, regardless of what that uniform is. You know, you can carry a few things with you, dark sense of humor being number one, but then a few other lovely, pleasant things that tend to follow us after we leave service. And writing can be very therapeutic. You know, I mentioned this before, but if I feel like strangling somebody, it is not socially acceptable for me to go out and actually strangle somebody, but I can do it on the page. And I can actually, you know, that's entertainment. So it's good. You know, it's very cathartic. You know, if I want to throat punch, I can throat punch, you know, using my characters. I just might not be able to do it out in the grocery store, let's say.
Yeah. You just remember that face that like took out your Achilles with a grocery cart. And you're like, all right, I got a bar fight to write tomorrow. And that bar fight's going to go so bad for you.
I was like, oh man, I need it. I needed a villain. Here we go.
Yeah. You just joined the top of the list. You're going to die badly in my imagination.
So, and yet it is socially acceptable for me to, you know, indulge in those dark fantasies, let's say, and it's actually a good, you know, it's a good outlet both creatively and, you know, mental health wise. So.
Yeah. And it's always fun when we're sitting around, most of the time it's in most socially unacceptable spot, like at a very, you know, civilized dinner party or something like that with people you don't know, mostly your spouse's friends. And they find out you're a writer and they're just like, yeah, how does that work? And you just start talking about a particular book and you just keep talking and talking and just trying to answer the question. And they look at you, they give you that weird look and they're like, you're dark. You got problems. Like, I don't have problems. I have imagination.
It's like, you know, like if only, you know, there weren't so much truth, it wouldn't be as funny, but all those memes about the FBI or NSA looking at our browser histories, like, is this person, you know, a psychopath? Or like, oh, nope, it's another writer. Probably the same.
Yeah. I think I opened with that one day because it was right in Tai 2 Overmatch. It starts with an attack on foreign soil on a Navy ship. And as I'm writing, I'm, you know, I'm looking up weapon system. I'm looking up the diagrams of what a littoral combat ship looks like, how things are organized on it. And all these weapon systems and all this stuff. And all this is open source. I'm just taking it down. And then, you know, as I get done with that opening chapter, I'm like, ooh, like, let's see. I got Navy systems. I got diagrams, schematics, weapons, terrorist tactics, all rolled into one. I'm like, they're coming. They're coming.
Like, I promise minute. It's research. I promise. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. I mean, wait a minute. You used to work for us. Now he went dark. Like, I can't wait to see how that plays out in the papers.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I used to have a blast when they would do my security clearances for the longest time because nobody would ask you what you actually did. Like you mentioned, you know, I did a lot of counterintelligence and human intelligence. That is espionage. So when they get to your security clearance questions and they ask you, you know, have you ever committed espionage? I got the biggest kick out of saying yes. And they're just sitting there and they're just watching their face just kind of, oh, what do I do with this? Like that absolute panic moment until they realize, oh, wait a minute. What do you do for a living? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Eventually, they got savvy and started it with a disclaimer. It says outside the course of your normal duties, which kind of ruined my fun. But for a while, it was a blast. They hated me.
I just got my latest clearance done. And I think it wrapped up in like June. But I transitioned to a different agency, took a new opportunity, which is kind of a unique one in the government. But I had to go back and I had to get back to a different clearance level. And as they're going, they're like, yeah, you've been out of this game so long. You need to revamp it. I'm like, okay, where's that start? And they're like, 20 years ago. I'm like, okay, have at it. So the whole time I'm sitting there, I'm like, that's when you just start wondering, like, do I have any skeletons that they missed the last four times that they investigated me? And you've got your inner dialogue and you're like, I've been investigated four times by numerous places ever. They've gone back to when I was seven. So the logical part of your brain is like, they've done this before. They're not going to find, there's nothing new here. And, but there's always that part, like is just something crazy going to come up? Like after, and like, I don't have any skeletons. I promise I don't have any skeletons. They would have found them, but there's still that question in the back of your head until it came back, like cleared. I was like, man.
Well, I think it's a little bit of human nature, but especially when you do the things that we do, you expect Murphy. So anytime you get into anything that's kind of like important, you expect Murphy to show up and, you know, show his ugly face and ruin your day. So, I mean, it's natural for you to at any point going, oh man, how is this going to get screwed up? So I think we all do it.
Yeah. I can see the sunlight. Here we go. Yeah. I can see the light at the end of the tunnel and something stupid's just going to ruin it. Yep. Right, like right here. Yep. It's the same as like a polygraph when they ask you, have you ever murdered anybody? And like, I have never taken a human life. And then there's that little voice in the back of your head being like, are you sure? I'm sure. But then you're like, well, what's the machine think?
I would remember that.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I would remember that. But what's the machine going to say, I think?
No, it's like, I think that's something they've started to account for, because, you know, for a long time, there was a bunch of people doing polygraphs that were coming back inconclusive. And it was just because the polygraphers were not asking the right questions. Yep. So I think they've moved past that, but it does all of it creates unique experiences for us. So like it with your books, you know, which I love your characters, they are so awesome. And, you know, if I had worked with, you know, Ty as an NCIS agent, I might not have badmouthed NCIS as much as I did. And I say that lovingly, because I have NCIS guys who I absolutely would take a bullet for, and a few not
away. Yeah.
Yeah. But reading that, like the banter, the dialogue, the mentality, I was like, it felt real to me. But, you know, you can't get that without having these experiences of, you know, sitting and having that moment of doubt, even though you haven't done anything. It makes it feel real.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so much fun when you can take something, and I've never like done the biography, like here I was, you know, that sort of thing. But you can draw on it, like you've said, you draw on that world that you lived in, and then you make it so much fun and sometimes so over the top. There's always that shred in there that like people in that service life, if they're reading it being like, oh, I've been there. Like, I know exactly what that joke meant, you know?
Yeah. It's like, well, with my first three books, you know, when I started writing, I envisioned a trilogy. And so, you know, in a lot of ways that helped me, in a lot of ways that hamstrung me, because I'd planned out for a trilogy. So I parsed things out in the books, and well, that makes it hard when you're doing a series to make everything a standalone. But then my editor, my agent kept going like, well, can you give us more here? Give us more here. And I'm like, no, I'm going to do that in the next book. I'm like, well, you haven't written that book. You need to focus on this book. I'm like, but I would get comments from people who would read it and be like, first book would be like, when you said, you know, bag drag, it was like, I was immediately there with you. I was like, I understood, you know, just like those little nuances that, you know, the the way somebody delivers a line, or, you know, a descriptor about a place, or, you know, how somebody acts, you know, it puts everybody back in that moment, kind of that sensory involvement. And it really makes a book jump out and the story stand out in somebody's memory. And I had a lot of fun with my trilogies, but it was almost like a marker for that time and place. It was like, I started writing while I was still active duty. Everything got put out essentially or completed while I was still active duty. So A New Game is the first book I've done since I've retired, and, you know, a different perspective, different viewpoint. And, you know, so I approach things a little differently. Yes, it's darker, but that's because I was having a whole lot of fun with you know, what direction my characters could go. Yeah, like you were saying, over the top.
Yeah. And we talked about that the first time you're on, like, I think I started with the first L book, but when I reached out to you, it was because I had started off, and like right from the get-go, L is joining the team already in place in theater. And I could feel the dust. I could feel that moon dust just coating me again. And I was like, you just, the way you describe that clapboard lifestyle, and just the you know, thriving despite the just nasty conditions sometimes, I was like, yeah, we should talk. Like, it was such a genuine setting that you set in those places. I was like, yeah, but it's just that authenticity, that thread that's there, that people are going to be like, oh yeah. But like in some parts, like the moon dust coming back, there's like, oh, right. And it's kind of the same thing when my beta readers we'll read over like a new book, that when I get one back that's like just ha ha ha, just like laughing, I'm like, yeah, okay, that one still rings true, because it's always like a U.S. Marshal or an agent or mm-hmm. or somebody, and when they can see it, I'm like, okay, I can still relate, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like, I think that was part of the reason, you know, because with the new series, like, this is going to be a multiple part, so, you know, this isn't a spoiler. You know, I do intend there to be at least one more book, if not two, depending on how things play out. You understand this, you know, mm-hmm. once you get into that world and your characters start talking to you, things might shift a little. But since my perspective's changed, I didn't want it to still have so much a military flavor, I guess. I wanted to branch out a little bit more. And so that's what I did. And, you know, having Elle go after the cartel was just, well, that's just fun. And then I also wanted to bring out a new protagonist. You know, everybody always says you only have one real protagonist, you know, and Elle's kind of my girl. But I brought Julian Saunders, you know, the SEAL that I introduced in the first three books, as a more of a protagonist position. I really wanted the story to be more about his kind of coming into where he's going next. He's a SEAL who's transitioning into this covert operations world. And, you know, everyone's like, oh, SEAL can do that. Well, SEAL does a lot of clan stuff, but not covert. That's a totally different world. And for somebody like, I wanted Julian in all of this to kind of be the light to her dark. You know, he is the quintessential good guy while she's morally flexible.
Yeah.
And so playing that off of each other, which is what I do in A New Game, you'll have a chapter from his perspective, a chapter from her perspective, you know, the light and the dark of that, I had a lot of fun with. And so this whole thing is essentially, like you talked about getting to the end of writing and then coming up with your title, I essentially did the same. A New Game is, you know, pretty giant metaphor. Not only is it a new mission, but there are new roles, new positions, you know, new stakes. Everything is brand new for these characters, and they're all learning how to navigate that.
Yeah, and it made me wonder while I was reading it, putting Elle in a different role, so to speak. You know, she's mm-hmm. she's on the run this time. She's off on the team, and support is not with her for mm-hmm. a lot of it, and they're at odds. It kind of points to a bigger question I'll ask in a minute, but when you changed that character's role, how did that? Did you have any, when you were looking at it, you're like, were there any steps where you're like, I'm going to write this and I don't know if I can come back from it? Like, if I change my mind and I want to throw her back on something, were you conflicted at all when you took her off in this direction?
Actually, she took me in this direction, because originally what I was I was envisioning kind of a First Blood kind of thing, you know, having like this chasing thing between, you know, the team and L, like where they were going after, and it almost become adversarial at that point. Kind of like, you know, the sheriff and John Rambo did in the books or in the book. But once I started writing, it didn't go that way. And so I am a big believer in letting your characters talk. So I kind of had a framework of what I wanted to do for the story. And then I just let the characters unfold in front of me. And it did go in a little bit different direction. It almost went much darker. You know, you've read it, so you might be a little surprised by that, but it almost went much darker, but it just didn't fit for the overall storyline. So my more darker thoughts ended up spawning a novella, which is what I'm working on now, which is going to be a standalone. And it's something that I'm going to put out here, you know, after the new year. But I really kind of played with a much, much darker, almost a psychological thriller. So it's going to be a little bit different for me.
There you go.
But it's, you know, I didn't want to waste kind of the thought train that I had with this one.
Yeah, and like, you don't I'm trying not to give it up. Scenes.
Well, yeah. I'm going to say my standalone, my protagonist is going to be a serial killer. So
I like that. I'm
going to have a field day with this one.
I can totally see how you were able to peel that out of a new game. You can totally see. Yep.
So it's dark, and I'm really kind of playing with the mind thing on that. So it's a different direction for me. It's going to have a bit of a different flavor, and I'm hoping people are going to enjoy reading it as much as I'm enjoying writing it. But yeah, it's fun.
Oh yeah. Especially that brings me to another question. You talked about switching perspectives and kind of, you know, the writing reflecting, you know, where you were at one point and where you're going. Mm-hmm. You got four books in now. And I like asking this question of writers, but when you look back, can you see where your evolution has been from one to the next to the next?
Oh, I look back at what I wrote in my debut, and I love my debut, don't get me wrong. But I kind of get that little bit of a gut clench, like, I really could have done better. But again, you don't know what you don't know. You know, when I set off, I had a much different, you know, perspective, vision. Yeah, there's a whole lot of lessons learned that you can only get from having those experiences. And then with each successive book, I've learned a lot more lessons. Yeah, I've gotten my teeth kicked in by my editor so many times. It's not even funny. But with each, you know, blow, I do learn, you know, surprisingly. She gets out her metaphoric red pen of death, and you know, after I whimper, pull myself out from underneath my desk, you know, I get to work, and then I do better the next time. You know, the next manuscript I turn in is a lot more, you know, polished. There's a lot less red pen, so to speak, coming back to me. My stories tend to have a little bit more flow and all the things that she's looking for. So I do feel pretty confident that, especially with the success of the third book, that this fourth book is going to be equally successful. I mean, Shadow War won Independent Press Award. It was nominated at Killer Nashville for, you know, best book in action adventure category. And I think A New Game is going to do the same this year. I think I'm going to take that category at Killer Nashville this year. And I am also, you know, I'm confident I'm going to come back with the Independent Press Award. I'm going to throw her in for the New York City Big Book Award as well. And I'm feeling pretty, I don't want to say cocky, but yeah, a little cocky.
Go
about
strong.
It.
Yeah. Go 100% or don't go at all. Right. Yep. That's right. Yeah. It's always, it comes back when I'm especially writing like the next in a series. And I actually never, until Ty, I never planned on writing a series, because I get a great scene in my head, or I got a character in my head, and I'm like, okay, what do we build off this guy? And it's evolved, like my Shattered Circle books evolved to the next story because another character popped up that I knew would be a perfect foil for Jackson Cole. And now with that one, I'm like, okay, I got an idea how to wrap this up and just blow everything up. And I'm like, you got it. But when you're writing it, you got to go back to like number one, make sure I get these names right. Okay, this happened here. Make sure I get those wound placements right and stuff like that. And I'm just like, every time it's like, I would never write that, right? I can't believe this guy put this in this book, and it's something no one else would notice. But it's like, if there's a had or a they or a the that's not supposed to be there anymore, that doesn't justify its position, it's like, oh, just hard to look at. But
we all end up with our little things. We all do.
Yeah, it's it's funny how that comes about. But yeah, it's. It kind of morphing that into process to bring it back to L for a minute, but the way you wrapped up, and I already told you this, but the way you wrapped up A New Game, I was just like, let's go. It was like just seeing how that last scene wrapped up, and I'm just like, this is gonna get to be a lot of fun, because there were so many. It was like the chessboard, but instead of you know, taking the king in this last chapter, you just kind of rearrange the chessboard to just start on part two. And it was like,
Oh yeah.
So everybody's just spinning out, going their different directions on their own missions. I'm like, I can't wait. Like, it's just, my question is, like, did you have that sketched out already? Or were you like wrapping up and being like, I have a way I want to end this, but my character's saying you're not going to end it this way, cause there's too much fun over here. So did you end it with the cliffhanger and be like, oh, now I got to figure out something cool to do?
I have a little bit more in my head already. So I ended it where I did because I thought it was the most strategic way to set things up for the next part, but I already had more. And so I did kind of get into it with my editor a little bit about where I ended it and whether or not that was going to be a good idea or not. So I know it's a risk to end on a cliffhanger, but we eventually finessed it a little bit. So even though it is a cliffhanger, it still has kind of that message of hope. It kind of ends on an upbeat, and it's not a complete downer. It's like, we're not talking, you know, Empire Strikes Back where everything, you know, Han's gone and Luke loses his hand and everything's gone to shit. It's like, so yes, things are not good, but you don't feel like the world is crashing down. So that's why I did that. It was a strategic decision. So, the biggest change, though, on how everything played out, it was I wanted Julian to be the protagonist. I wanted Elle to kind of back out. Elle refused. So I ended up doing more of a port and starboard, you know, like two protagonists throughout the story. And there, I think I wouldn't have been doing it justice if I hadn't allowed that to happen.
Yeah.
So, and there's going to be a lot more fun with these guys. Julian is going to continue to be like my central character for this portion, this storyline. And then so Elle will back out a little bit, but because, you know, she is such a strong character and, well, I kind of like keeping her around for some strange reason. She's still going to be there.
and it's kind of like, I don't know, to take like Julian's place is like, you got the spotlight, bud, but just know that there's like a hawk circling. So watch your back. It's like, of all the characters I would like nipped in the bud if I was going to take over a series, it'd be her, because you're just wondering where she's coming from next. Uh-huh. Right.
I say, and I think that, yeah, you know, as a writer creatively, that gives you a lot of fun, because if you've made somebody who is the equivalent, you know, of, you know, a hurricane that you really don't know how much damage they're going to do or when they're going to strike, you know, that can be a lot of fun when you're dealing with, you know, a thriller or an action novel. But I liked the idea, especially with Julian being kind of such a good character. Like, he is a very stand up, good hero, classic hero type of character. And I enjoyed having that, you know, because I'm a nerd. I like having, you know, like the quintessential knight in shining armor good guy, especially when my protagonist is not. And so that right. it was something I could easily justify. But now that he's getting his hands dirty, I really want to play with that character development. I really want to go into his arc of him getting way outside his comfort zone and having to do things that he normally would not do for the quote unquote greater good. You know, that those challenges.
Yeah. And I just like the fact that it wasn't like, you know, with sometimes with our characters, we build them up so much. It's when it's like the Superman syndrome, like he's so strong. Like, who are you going to throw him up against? But mm-hmm. with Julian, the way it ended, it was like, you got a new role, bud, and nobody's going to show you how to do it. But there's nobody that can. So it's Vaya con Dios, bud. Yeah. Like, I just love it when they're just thrown out in the middle of that just thrown on the grinder is like, well, maybe you might figure it out, or you might just end the world. We don't know.
Yep. And that's why I chose that way, the ending that I did, because there's more that I want to do. And I really do think I'm doing the character arc and the character development the most justice by ending it like that. Extra added benefit of it being a cliffhanger and being a little fun. But it did add onto the pressure of now I really have to deliver with the next book to make sure that I don't piss off everybody.
Right. So, especially your editor.
Yep. Oh my God. She'll be brutal. Brutal. Yeah. You might actually hear me whimpering.
Right. Yeah. I'm just whenever that feedback comes in, it's like, I really like that you're almost like, well, I'd kind of like to go in this way. And they have so many smart reasons why not. And it's like, I'm gonna go this way. And they're, when they finally say, okay, you're like, thanks, coach. I think. Right.
Yeah. Yep.
I think thanks. Yeah. We'll see. But yeah, that's, I like it. So you kind of cut. So if I'm understanding correctly, you kind of cut New Game off early to be able to develop further plots instead of the original wrap up you had planned. You just are like, let's stop it here and just continue. That's good. That's what I always wonder. Cause I've never sketched out like the cliffhanger and then it's been like, crap, I gotta figure this out. You know, it's always good. I guess it's always good to have a roadmap instead of just like driving off a cliff and then coming up with a good idea.
I'm a pantser. I've only recently, I wouldn't say learned, but embraced the idea of doing outlines, but it wasn't for a novel. You know, it's like I'm back in school. I'm doing my screenwriting degree, and part of that is developing a film. And so one of my courses made me do an outline for a feature film, an original feature film. And so that was really kind of the first time I've had to actually force myself to sit down and do an outline for an entire story. And truthfully, it wasn't as terrifying as I thought when it ended up being beneficial. And it's something that I think that I can kind of merge and work, because usually I just kind of, like you, I have a scene in my head. I have a scene and I got to get it on paper. It just, and usually things kind of develop based off a scene or around a scene. And I'll usually just have a general start point and a general end point, and then I just play in between those hash marks. But to actually have to do a 16B outline for a feature film, it's forced me to look at things differently. And it's forced me to embrace the idea of doing the outline. Mainly because, perfect example, you have a fantastic idea. Do you spend all your time writing a script that somebody might not ever buy? Or do you just write a 16B outline, give it to somebody and say, hey, what do you think of the story? And have them go, oh, yeah, go ahead and develop it. I'm going to pay you to now write that script.
There you go.
Yes. Or spend all your time writing something that nobody will ever see that now gets shelved. But you have the 16-beat outline. So he says, hey, it's good, but not for now. I take, you know, that what, 4 pieces of paper, and I put it in a folder and I put it up somewhere. And if I want to develop it later, I haven't lost the idea I have. I have it mainly fleshed out, and it makes it a lot easier to pick back up and run with it. Like, but you didn't spend weeks, months writing a script, same idea.
Now transitioning into the screenwriting world, starting as a novelist, like I would love to, and I've played with it a little bit. Cause I noticed at one point, like I'm a diehard outliner, like it, wherever that scene starts, whether it starts with a character or starts with a scene, I get a hook and I get an end, and then I build the roadmap in between the two. And as I was sketching out, it was this new one, the 48 hours in space. I don't know why that sticks in my head, but that's what it is. As I was doing that, I'm like looking at it at my outline, and I'm like, this is basically a screenplay, because the screenplay is very tight. I mean, you've got to stay within a prescribed page number. And for me, it's always been like, what the hell is a slug line, and why do I have to capitalize this, and why is it all center spaced? It doesn't make sense to me. But this time, because I had just looked at it, because I started probably a year or two ago, I would download like the screenplays, like just grab Avengers. And then as I'm watching Avengers, just like kind of flip through to try to connect the two. Yeah, it's so cool because it's the format is alien to me. But then when I see it on the screen, I'm like, oh, this makes a lot of sense. So when I was outlining my my sci-fi, I opened up a second window in Scrivener and opened up a screenplay model. So I just dropped the two in and kind of add those weird formatting things. I'm like, this is starting to make sense. So I'm experimenting in it. But yeah, it's forever was such a foreign concept. But did you, what was your trouble in going from, I can write 100,000 words, but now I have to do it in 90 pages in an outline form.
So you know what, you mentioned it earlier, doing the graphic novel version of Shadow Game. I think that actually kind of helped me shift my mentality a little bit. So it wasn't as foreign. It's still foreign. And don't get me wrong. It's learning a new world and, you know, learning a new formatting and methodology. But because I had already gone and took my own source material and turned it into a visual medium, I'd already learned quite a bit about what can actually be seen, like what can be shown and not necessarily thought and, you know, internalized, you know, having to tweak the storyline to make it the best visual element is what we did with the graphic novel. So now when I'm writing scenes and, you know, my professors are, you know, doing the whole show, don't tell thing, it means something totally different than it does in a novel, because it literally is, what can you see on the screen?
Yeah, watch it.
Yeah. Like, what are you seeing? You know? And so having to do the action sequences or little bits of narration in there, you have to choose your words carefully. Because you want the scene, you want to set it, but you're also not trying to tell the actors how to act or the director how to direct. So you got to get just enough in there that they can get the feel and they can really invest and buy into what's happening in the scene, and they can be inspired in their own right. But if you start telling them like, hey, you need to cut to this angle here, put the camera here, actor, you need to act this way, then suddenly you're going to be doing rewrites, or they're just going to tell you to take your script and jam it, because they're also artists and professionals and they need the leeway to do their job.
Yeah. So telling the doctor how to do surgery.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I tried to teach myself, you know, and I probably could have, but I was running into so many like little nuanced things that, you know, with the formatting and verbal, you know, the vocabulary, the lexicon of everything, like just really wasn't grasping. And it's because there's so much that is just kind of organizational knowledge, and it doesn't necessarily translate to like picking up a book and teaching it to yourself. So, you know, formatting wise, I could figure out, but going to class and actually, you know, having the professors talk about, well, this is what it's like on set, this is what people mean, this is like, this is the terminology that is most common for them to use. Like, some people will say this, but what they really mean is this, you know, those type of things that you really only get by living the life has proved to be extremely valuable. It's, you know, I'm learning not just the technique, but kind of those fundamental, like just being immersed in that world, building blocks. And it's money. And I would highly recommend anybody who's trying to write a screenplay, don't try to do the formatting on your own. Just don't. There's get Final Draft. That's kind of the industry standard, and it will literally do it for you. So save yourself the sanity and get the software that will format your script for you.
good news to know now. I've only been struggling with it like 5 years.
Sorry. you can still do it. You can pick it up now for your next script, or, you know, even transfer one over, but highly recommend that. Just don't even try to tab over. Don't even try to make it look right, because I swear to God, they will know.
And I'm slow in the uptake anyway. I'm really good at jumping into things and then figuring out how to do it later. So like, I'm like the guy who just found Scrivener 3 books ago. Like, I was writing, I was like just banging it all out of Word, and then just stumbled into it. I was like, oh, this is how they do it. You know? I'll just scribble out, you know, handwrite a couple screenplays, and then be like, oh, they have something called Final Draft. I can just throw it in there. Okay. Check that box. I'm catching up a little bit.
but this is why we all talk, and, you know, why our community is so cool, because our community will all like, hey, I heard you're doing this, what about this? And like, you know, here's my recommendations. Here's my lessons learned. Like, hey, this is why I would do it. And from what I understand, you don't get that in other communities. You don't, I like the romance community, I've heard, is completely backstabby, which kind of fits considering the genre. But yeah, for, you know, the thrillers, you know, thriller guys, you know, the thriller verse, we're all pretty tight and we're all very supportive. And it goes beyond just like, hey, your book is awesome. It goes into the craft, and it goes into like, here, lessons learned marketing, you know, recommendations for agents, recommendations for editors. And I think that's because we all want each other to be better.
Yeah.
It's like, because then if everybody around me ups their game, I got to up my game too.
Yeah. It's such a healthy, and I don't even think I can call it competition, but it's just everybody's on the same team and everybody wants to see everybody be successful. And though we're all playing in the same marketplace, everybody doesn't see each other as, you know, somebody I need to stab in the back. It's like, hey, if you read my book, you're going to love Adair's book, or you're going to love Bishop's book, or, you know, anybody. So it's the wildest thing that to learn is just seeing how cool everybody is with each other. You've probably had the same experience, but you go to book conventions and, those big signings, and then you'll see those people who are really, really frustrated because they're not selling a book a minute, and they came here to get rich. And it's like, you're not going to get richer. Nope, you're here to talk to people and network. And then you see the other ones that are looking sideways, and they're not thriller writers that do that. It's, you're absolutely right. It's funny.
Yep. It's because I think we're all fans first. We're fans. We're readers first.
That's where we came from. Yeah.
Exactly. And we all understand that, well, yes, we want success on our own. You're putting out what? Maybe a book a year? What else are you going to read 364 days a year? And so we all want each other to do awesome, because I want more material. So get me more books on my bookshelf. And, you know, who knows what you might be inspired by. You know, I would be honored to have somebody pick up my book who is also an author and go, man, that really just kind of got my juices going. And I felt inspired to write. I'm like, victory. Like, I throw the touchdown flag right there. Let's go.
And it's fun. When I decided to dedicate to the thrillers, and I started out playing around in the horror genre, and then playing around in the fantasy genre. And when I decided to really dedicate to the crime thriller, because you write what you know, I went for a while where I was like, I don't want to read Vince Flynn right now. I don't want to start Jack Carr series, because I don't want to write something and then end up like stealing it, like, you know, I was like reading the most off the wall stuff possible. And it wasn't until I came back and started the TCP that, you know, my TBR is just full, and it's like, true crime is cool, but I need to balance it with the thrillers, because you get, you know, you do 10 episodes of true crime talking about serial killers, things get dark. So let me get creative for a minute. Thankfully hasn't been that way. Like, I haven't seen myself being like, oh, you know, sketching something out and be like, seen it, you know, you stole that. And like, no, I didn't. But that, for oddly, like, probably the same reasons we talked about earlier with the polygraph and the background investigations, I didn't want to like have that voice in the back of my head being like, who'd you steal this from? You know?
Yep. I think we all probably do something like that, you know, or most of us have been through a phase where you don't want to have somebody else's voice in your head when you're trying to work out your own story. But I've actually started to come around to the idea that it can be helpful to, it's almost like a palate cleanser, you know, especially if you're at a point where you're at a transition or you're struggling to get somebody else's voice in your head for a little bit, and then come back with fresh eyes and look at your own again. It really can help you just, you know, flesh out a better story. So I think it's how you approach it and how you view it. I mean, obviously nobody wants to plagiarize anybody else's stuff, but unless you are actively trying to do that, I think once you go back for rewrites in editing, which you do a million times anyway, you're going to catch it. So the risk of having that actually happen without it getting caught and you being able to, you know, address it is probably fairly minimal.
Yeah. And I've seen that, that refreshing, like, especially, I don't know if you've seen this, but like, you know, you already opened the door, so I don't sound crazy when I say it, but when the characters' voices start sounding the same, like this, they're always like I'm like, I have a great idea, and I can just see Ty in my head being like, I'm not doing that. But at some point during that first draft, you've got like your main character, and then you've got your supporting characters, and if they all start having the same voice, it's like, I gotta stop, because I've got a monologue here. So it's, you just stop, go read something else, just close it for a minute, and it comes back and your characters suddenly have their identities again. It's It's good to, like you said, cleanse it every now and then, get out of your own head.
This is another one of those communities where you can talk about the voices in your head and nobody thinks twice about it. You're like, it is totally normal.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I have a coffee mug that actually says, you know, I know the voices in my head aren't real, but they have some great ideas.
Right. Yeah. That's where they come from. That's exactly where they come from. Yep. Yeah. So,
civilians might look at me a little weird, but we get it.
So used to it. Yeah. So used to it. There's only so many off the wall, off color jokes you can tell in normal company before you're like, I understand. And honestly, my wife is so used to apologizing for it that she's like my hype man, like, and she'll see it. She'll be like, she'll just see the off the wall story coming out. She's like, no, I need you for a minute. I just,
yeah, let's intervene.
They're not going to think it's as funny as you think it is.
I've had to do that a few times. Both my husband and I are retired Navy. And so we both have pretty twisted sense of humor, which is great when we're just bouncing off each other. But there's been a few times we've been out and he's starting to go down a path that I know where this is going. And I'm like, yeah, like grabbing him scuff for the neck. Like, no, this is not going to go well.
Yeah. You know, this is a church function, right?
Like, I'm pretty sure our neighbors don't need to hear that story. We have to live next to these people.
That's right.
Wait for a few beers, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, but when you get a group of us together, depending on whatever service or, you know, police, law enforcement, whatever the service life was, you just get complete strangers together. And suddenly it's like the most raucous table at the bar and everybody's just looking at you like you're a bunch of whack jobs. And just like, yeah, but, you know, I've never met this person in my life, but we're hilarious together. Yep. At least we think so.
This is a full Step Brothers moment. Like, did we just become best friends? Yep.
Right. Yes, we sure did. Yep. And we did it talking about like a car accident or something. It's ridiculous.
Yep. Usually the worse the scenario, the funnier it's going to get.
Yeah, exactly. So you mentioned doing the novella and I, looking at that, I never really thought about the novellas until Bishop put out his A Ransom Daughter earlier in the year. And I'm always a novel guy because I like digging into a long form. I can depend on this friend to be in my life until it's over. So when I read his, I was like eyes open to the market there. I think, you know, and how fast everybody's life is these days. And how little time, you know, between the kids, the work, the everything else that drags at you, to have a novella length work to go into, it's like boom, 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 and you're ready for the next one. Did you put any thought into the? I think there's a market there. I know that if you Google it, they're going to say different things about it. But were you like, yes, there's a way to serialize these novellas, and I think there's an audience to capture with that.
I think there's an audience for it. The problem with novellas is, generally speaking, publishers don't want to touch them. So if you aren't your own cheerleader and if you aren't putting out, you know, essentially your own messaging about it, the chances are it's just going to disappear unless you already have a devoted fan base. And, you know, where at which point you are grabbing anything you can that's about the characters that you love. Now, you do something that's standalone. Again, you're trading on your name recognition. And if you don't have that, then again, it is 100% up to you to tell everybody why they need that book, because publishers don't see that there's any money in it. And I think that is a bit of a mistake, because exactly like you said, if you have a good story and, you know, people want that beach read, they want that, you know, like that short, just like, hey, let me get something, you know, maybe scratch the itch until that next novel comes out from the author I like. There is that opportunity in that market for it, but you're going to have to work for it. I think what kind of that collaborative thing that's going on with the Silverback Publishing is going to be epic, mainly because, you know, all the people that involved with it are top notch dudes. And so you have, you know, some killer authors, you have the guys from Best Thriller Books. They're, you know, some of those dudes have all come together and came up with this idea because, you know, there were authors who had absolutely amazing stories to tell and nothing to do with them. And so they wanted to do something with it. Now we'll see if it actually can, you know, materialize into being the big thing, you know, because Best Thriller Books started out as kind of like nobody knew who these guys were. And now they've really evolved over the last couple of years. And I think Silverback's probably going to do the same, because people are going to realize, hey, these are great stories that are coming out of here. Readers have the opportunity to, you know, talk to the author, to have a say in the covers, to get arcs, you know, all the fun stuff that we as nerds and, you know, lovers of reading really get into. You're going to have that opportunity to do with a bunch of authors and a bunch of novellas. And I think that's going to be just cool as hell, but it's going to be money.
Yeah, it's such a new mode. I really like the premise of what they've opened up. So I think, but yeah, I see that novella market. I just see it really working. And I hope my books are like, I'm marked out. Like, I would love to just, you know, knock out good, you know, 45,000-50,000 words and throw it out. Just a nice quick hit in between novels. But my, I don't know if you plan the same way, but I'm like, I got, I'm finished up sci-fi, going back to tie, going back to sci-fi, going back to fantasy. And I'm like, if I look at it and I look at the timeline of what my future plans are, like, I'm booked 5 years out. I'm like, it's hard to think about. Yeah. Right.
Yep. Well, hey, but at least you have a 5-year plan, as they say.
I got a 5-year plan. Yeah.
There you go. And if that works for you, by all means, man, run with it. Mm-hmm. I think part of being a writer is acknowledging that your schedule's never really going to be your own, and you're going to have to find a groove that works for you for it to have any lasting staying power. And I mean, because anybody can do anything for a short amount of time, you know, everybody can meet deadlines, everybody can really push hard when they need to. But if you want to do this full time, and if you want to make it a career, you're going to have the discipline to really hone your craft and then put in the time every single day. And you know, that might not work for everybody, but if you've got 5 years planned out, man, then I'd say you're golden.
It's the plan. Yeah, it is the plan. But yeah, but I mean, as long as you, like you say, look at it as a second career that may or may not pay, yeah. Right? Well, or it's an obsession, in which case.
There you go. No, I like to look at it, and I know I'm in a very unique position because I'm retired, so I don't have to have another income stream. I am not actively pursuing another career. I'm doing this because I like it. This is a creative outlet for me. I do want to be successful, not going to lie. But I have no illusions about being a New York Times bestseller. I have, you know, I am not going to be the next Jack Carr. It's not in the cards. But I do it anyway because this is what I like to do. I like telling stories. And so for me, I can easily make these decisions about what to write and when to write because it is still a labor of love and a passion and not something I feel beholden to.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I'm looking at too. I'm not retired yet, but I can't wait.
You'll get
very
there.
Jealous. I'm very jealous of you. Yeah.
Retirement's fantastic. It takes yep. some time. It takes the transition. That word is very apropos. It takes some getting used to, and it'll sneak up on you when it actually hits. Like, oh shit, this isn't exactly as smooth as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Having a plan, I guess, is very important. Yeah.
Yeah. Having a plan, but also being okay when your plan goes to shit. Like, remember Murphy, and he will be waiting for you on the other side. So give yourself the grace to figure out what really works for you. Take time for you and, you know, trust that it's going to work out. You just, all the best planning in the world will not fully prepare you for it. So you just got to kind of take it with a grain of salt, roll with the punches. You'll be fine.
Yep. Just keep grinding. That's all it is. Just continue the grind. Yep. But I've kept you almost an hour now, and I know you've got the wee ones, to get handled. I've got the same. So
no, I get it. My husband actually took them to go get haircuts, which is why you didn't see me get attacked or you didn't hear any screaming in the background. But yeah, return's probably imminent.
You're right.
I should probably start playing like the Imperial March when my son comes home. That would be fitting.
if If you can, you know what, now that you say that, if I could replace like my Ring camera tone with the Imperial March, that'd be awesome. So whenever like you, when they're coming home, you just hear him coming, like the Emperor's walking down the shuttle steps, like, oh, yep, game time. Let me stretch, because I'm about to get my butt kicked by a 10-year-old.
He's like, I'm not sure who's worse, you know, like Emperor Palpatine or, you know, my 4-year-old. So I'm pretty sure every day I'm witnessing a supervillain origin story. So
nice.
It's only a matter of time.
Just a matter. Just try to guide one way or the other. Just out of jail. Just out of jail. Yeah, you can be as gray as you want. Just not. Don't get indicted.
Just plausible deniability.
Right, but before I let you go, thanks for joining me. And your website amadare.com, if I remember correctly, and you're on IG and Twitter.
I am. So I'm on the social media. So Threads, Instagram, X. What's the other one? Damn it. Facebook. Damn it.
Yeah. TikTok. Are you doing weird TikTok dances?
No, I avoid TikTok still.
Yeah. Too much OPSEC for me to go on TikTok.
It's old habits die hard. I cannot bring myself to download the app. I can't do it.
But I had it for a little while and I cringed every time just thinking of I just couldn't. Yeah. That trauma is still there.
It's hard enough for me to have LinkedIn. I was like, the hair on the back of my neck stood on end. I'm like, no, I can't. I'm a civilian now. I can do this.
Right. And it's there's no connection to me to professional life in anything on my profiles. Like it's all just author. But it's still, you go on LinkedIn and you see the people that are like, just throwing out their credentials and all the professional stuff. I'm like, I like staying low pro. I'm a low pro guy. Yeah.
Your skin starts to crawl. You die a little inside. Like, oh my God, I can't do this.
Yeah.
But now, as always, John, it's a blast talking to you. Hopefully we actually, said something entertaining to everybody else, because I kind of just get lost in chit chat with you. So
that's the plan. I mean, hopefully somebody gets something out of this. We covered a lot of ground. Other people are going to have to tell us if it made sense, but
ask for feedback. Like, did you understand any of that? Or was that just two, crusty old veterans going like,
maybe
next time we'll have beers and we'll make it really fun.
Exactly. Yeah, we definitely got to link up at some point. In the meantime, have a great Christmas and good luck with Julian handling trying to take the spotlight from Elle. We'll see how that works out.
I can already tell you it's not going to be pretty.
I'm okay with that.
Awesome. Thank you, man. A great holiday, great new year. And if there's ever anything I can do, just hit me up.
All right. You too. All right. Good night, everybody.